We have, we're in the last phases of cleaning two additional tanks, tanks 12 and 16. And so we would look forward in about a year to be closing those tanks as well if the funding is there. So sort of the bottom line on our salt waste processing is we are in the active mode. We are actively retrieving high-level waste from 15 tanks or have retrieved it from 15 tanks, and we are solidifying the resultant solutions. They're either going to grout for the low activity, high volume, or high activity, low volume is going to glass. And so we are a completely functioning site. We will function better with salt waste processing, and we'll be processing into 10 to 12 million gallons a year when salt waste processing comes up. We also store and process used nuclear fuel. The Defense Board has taken interest in storage of materials in L Basin, and we have a small amount of fuel in the basin that we don't believe is compatible with long-term storage, and we really don't want to store any of it for long-term because we have the ability to process it in H Canyon, and we want to be moving forward in dispositioning those materials. But we are working with the Defense Board and managing those materials that they believe have some potential vulnerability for longer storage, and we'll be working those off first. But a couple of our goals, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that we believe by 2020 we can be out of the basin with the bulk of our materials, so either processed or dry storage. We believe that we could exercise the Idaho swap and by that time period, about the only aluminum clad fuel that would be in the basin would be the material we traded with Idaho, and because we are actively working off that material.
Can I just ask you, is this before or after the sequestration and the budget issues that you think you can be out by 2020? Is that this, with today's?
This is after sequestration with the ability to manage the site.
Thanks.
And move funds around.
Okay, so everything you're telling us is stuff that you think you can do if you can reprioritize your money.
With the exception of at tank processing, I believe that would need additional funds.
Okay.
And if I happen to stumble across another one, I'll try and remember to identify that one as well. We are doing testing on fuel that the Defense Board believes is more vulnerable than we do, and we will continue to actively manage that fuel. Sort of a philosophy that my staff is starting to adopt is there are opportunities in every adversity, and so we are looking for those, and we really believe that the expertise within the site, the unique resources within the site as it relates to nuclear management, nuclear materials management, environmental restoration, clean energy technologies, and national security fit in well with our future vision for the site, and we believe there are actually more opportunities presented to us by the very tight budget. We have challenges, but I fully believe that the fact that we have the only hardened operating nuclear processing facility is a major advantage to moving forward. The expertise that we have at Savannah River National Laboratory in all of the areas listed here, nuclear materials, radiochemistry, is why the Savannah River National Laboratory partnering with Pacific Northwest Laboratory has been asked by the senior managers in the department to engage TEPCO in the aftermath of Fukushima. It's why those two entities have been tasked by the secretary to provide the test program to solve the issues at the waste treatment plant at Hanford. So we do believe that there are opportunities afforded by the adversity of tight budgets. I'm often asked, because we coined Enterprise SRS as a picture of our strategic vision for the site, is it dead because of sequestration? And no, it's alive and well. We do believe that the site can have an expanded role in tritium, including irradiating targets on small modular reactors to capture the full tritium mission for this country. We clearly are and will continue to receive materials that are a proliferation risk worldwide. We continue to not only store plutonium, but the concern about plutonium coming in without a lot of public notice, we've also been quietly shipping plutonium out without a lot of public notice as well. We are actively dispositioning off-spec plutonium to the waste isolation pilot plant. Some of the examples of new work over the last couple of years, we are purifying plutonium to feed MOX. We are working to bring in additional materials from other countries that are proliferant materials. We're engaging the local universities on a regional nuclear medicine capability with production and separations occurring at the Savannah River site and patient studies at the local university hospitals. And we've actually applied some of our hydrogen technology to natural gas absorption onto advanced materials, looking at a way that one might make natural gas a better transportation fuel rather than a propane tank sitting in the rear of your vehicle. We're actively engaging industry, and I appreciated the question at the break as it related to whether or not, Vincent asked whether or not we'd actually looked at whether there were some valuable materials in some of our garbage, and yes, we have, and we fully believe there are. And one of those is americium-241. As we're purifying the plutonium for MOX, rather than dumping that americium into more glass canisters, the oil and gas industry is scrambling, trying to find enough sources of americium-241. And we stand ready and are working with industry and the Office of Science to fill that need. We're working with local economic development groups and industry on providing helium-3 for the industry. And we've been asked to evaluate a program that the site did on plutonium-238 heat sources for NASA missions. And we're looking at that and currently have developed a proposal to Nuclear Energy to again bring that technology forward at the site. We think that from our interest in small modular reactors and other nuclear manufacturing that we can help springboard some quality NQA1 quality manufacturing in the region. In addition to that, we often think of some of our liabilities, turning them into assets. Some of the advanced reactors require 20% enriched material. We happen to have a lot of that in excess of 20% enrichment sitting in L Basin. So those materials could be startup cores for these advanced reactors, and is one of the reasons that a handful of advanced reactor manufacturers are very interested in partnering with the site and moving that industry forward. if we look at a snapshot in the future, we will be doing at tank treatment, and this again will require an investment that is beyond our current funding envelope. The increased throughput through ARP MCU, we are currently doing, we are going into an outage to change the next generation solvent, and we will be running that this coming fall. We believe that we will be running salt waste processing within the decade with the next generation solvent achieving 12 million gallons of throughput a year. I refuse to build another monument to waste, no matter how elegant those glass waste storage buildings are. We're pushing very hard to have 4,000 of our canisters included in whatever the department chooses to exercise as the pilot storage facility. And as we empty the pilot storage facility for used fuel, I'm pushing hard to have our glass canisters also be considered in that pilot, and us de-inventory glass waste storage buildings number 1 and 2, so that we don't build any more glass waste storage buildings. We are moving forward, if funding allows, and this is one where funding is impacting us. I wanted to initiate going ahead and de-inventorying glass waste storage building number 1 and getting those glass canisters in a shippable configuration on a pad, getting ready for this, and we currently don't have the funding to do that.
Can I get you to clarify? Are you saying that you want your defense waste, your canisters, to be part of the interim storage facility that we've just spent the last hour talking about?
The pilot, I do.
The pilot, you do. Okay, that's new.
And I'm running it up the flagpole within the department because I think it really makes sense from the standpoint that we have to be concerned in this country not only about interim storage of the commercial use fuel that was destined for Yucca Mountain, but also we have defense high-level waste that was destined for Yucca Mountain as well. Why would we exclude that from the pilot or the demonstration capability? Now, let me make that very clear. That is not a Department of Energy policy. That is a Dave Moody push, just so we are very clear. And whether I win that within the department, it has resonated very well thus far, but I'm not quite there yet.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was understand what you were telling me. I was.
You were. I also believe that...
Can I make a comment? But sure. One of the things when we were starting to look at modifying design of operations for waste at Savannah River between DHEC and the council and DOESR and Savannah River contractors, one of our goals, continuous goals on this in that process, was that we would eventually move the waste out of the state, and so you're consistent with that goal that the council has endorsed. I don't know how many years ago.
It was before I arrived, but I recognized that goal, and I believe it makes sense as well. I also believe we have an opportunity not to break the bank in shipping our lower activity, high-level waste glass logs because they don't really need the shielding and weight of used fuel shipping casks. And so I believe there is opportunity, again, not funded, but I believe there is opportunity to design and construct and license a lighter weight shipping cask for defense high-level waste that would be a benefit to the nation and certainly allow us to more efficiently ship to the interim pilot if I'm successful in my arm wrestling. So the bottom line is yes, we have fallen off the cliff and there are rocks at the cliff, but I still believe the future is bright for the Savannah River site. I believe our technologies and our expertise and our resources in the beneficial reuse of those is well suited for the future nuclear endeavors in this country. With that, open the questions.
Thank you, Dave. Questions?
Dave, we occasionally hear about a educational reactor called, I think it's Project Sunrise or something along those lines. Is that dead or does it still have legs?
It still has life. It doesn't have any funding right now, but it still has life. I fully believe that regionally, if you start looking, we've been in the wrong trend of shutting down those research reactors, and so we have several nuclear energy programs regionally that have no reactor to really train individuals on, and I still fully believe that that's an important element of the land, the security, the infrastructure that we have to partner with the local universities and move that project forward. I've not found the traction for funding yet, but we are not giving up on that. We still believe that it's a vital part of what we bring to the table.
Dr. Moody, I have some questions about the reduction in workforce or work hours for up to 2,000 people and then the 150 people that are furloughed or will be furloughed.
Those are rough numbers, by the way, but they're in the ballpark.
The 150, is that included in the 2,000?
Yes, and 2,000 may be closer to 2,100, but nominally, yes. But they may start with 32-hour work weeks, but they may be furloughed for a couple of months later if the funding picture does not improve.
Our members of our legislative delegation have spoken with members of our congressional delegation about the reprogramming issue, which, as I understand it, is what needs to happen at this point in order to hopefully avoid the implementation of these reduced work hours and furloughs. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And it's my understanding that it's unlikely that we're going to be able to get an answer before April 1st. Is that fair to say?
That's fair.
Because of the current budget situation in Washington in terms of the calendar, and is that fair?
That is indeed fair.
So let me ask this. In terms of Don Wells and I are both here, and between the two of us, we probably represent the most people who are impacted by these expected reductions in furloughs. And so what else can we be doing as elected officials other than communicating with our congressional delegation about this? I mean, should we be writing a letter as a delegation to the president? Are there other things that we should do? I mean, what can we do? Because, I mean, as everybody here recognizes, these impacts are substantial. And 2,100 people is, you know, a lot of family members across Aiken County and the surrounding counties who are going to be impacted. And a 20% reduction in someone's income, or some up to 150 would be furloughed with, I assume, no income for a period of time. And a lot of these people have mortgages and other obligations they have to make in supporting their families. So I'm very concerned. I know Representative Wells is as well. And what can we be doing beyond what we are doing?
Yeah, I am very concerned for our workforce as well. And I think it will be very difficult in this particular climate to restore the $100 million this year. And so just having the ability to move the funds around, to make the hard decisions, that really is in Congress's hands at this point in time. As I believe we'll have a continuing resolution for the rest of the year, if it comes down across control points, as it currently is, we will be forced to initiate, the contractors will be forced to initiate those furloughs starting April 1st. Continuing resolution won't raise its head likely before the very last of this month. And so there may only be a few days before we really have to, the contractors really have to move forward with this. And so it really, I think the communicating to our delegation the importance of removing those restrictions even as they implement the continuing resolution, to the extent that it might be possible for a continuing resolution not to occur with those restrictions on them, but to remove them. Most often in continuing resolutions, you have more flexibility for moving things around. That has not been the case this year. And so either that or expedite the process for reprogramming. Last year, we had a small reprogramming we needed. It took us 4 months to do a reprogramming. We have already gotten our reprogramming ready to go from the department to the Office of Management and Budget. So it's cleared the hurdles within the Department of Energy, which is usually the slow point, to be fair. But it also requires personal attention at each of the congressional committees that have to approve the reprogramming. And so to the extent that that could occur as part of the budget process, then we would not have to implement on April 1st. To the extent that they have the ability to do that, I'm not sure. The second thing is encouragement to expedite the reprogramming request that will, if it is not on their desk when continuing resolution is issued, it will be there shortly thereafter. Those are probably the most efficient actions that could be taken right now.
Just for my education, why would they not expedite the reprogram? Why would they not let you reprogram the funds? They being Congress.
They generally agree to reprogramming, but oftentimes they want to understand the impacts. If you're pulling funds out of this area and moving them to another, there may be an affected party that communicates to a certain congressman that this will have an adverse impact on their particular program, and so one often has to enter into discussions with the individuals. What you're seeing is what they will see in our reprogramming request is what we believe is the best way to move between six control points that we have at the Savannah River site, and it's been vetted through the Department of Energy, and by the time it goes to Congress, will have also been vetted through the Office of Management and Budget. And so that's where we want it to go, but there are always affected parties that will engage the process.
What's the time frame on that? In other words, where are you in this reprogramming request?
We are ready to send it to the Office of Management and Budget whenever they're ready to receive it. Congress can't consider it until the continuing resolution is in place, because you're really moving around the funds that are part of that continuing resolution, and so they really can't consider it until they pass a continuing resolution. If they pass a continuing resolution earlier than the 27th of this month, when we fall off of the next
get washed out
cliff.
To sea.
Right.
Okay. Either way. HQ is clearly you present this to HQ, and it's very clear
that we're through that process.
All right. So is there anything that can be done to by any of us, by our representative, senator, or even the council, to improve the likelihood of this?
I think encouraging our congressional delegation to get behind the reprogramming is key, and to expedite that, because every month that that reprogramming lingers, those individuals are furloughed for that period.
I have another question. Who actually has to make the decision? Is it a vote of Congress, or is it a committee vote? Is it a subcommittee vote? I mean, who is the ultimate decision maker? Do you know?
I believe there are two different committees, one in the House and one in the Senate. Both have to approve it. Doug, do you know which committees?
I think we would want to know, if possible, which committees, and then if any of our current members of our delegation are on either committees on either side of the aisle.
They likely are, and we will get you that as soon as we can.
Do you mind, and I don't want to take up too much time for the council, but I know in one of your earlier slides you mentioned about the impact that the expected cuts could have on the spent fuel, and do you mind going back to that slide and maybe let's talk about that a little bit more?
I think it was slide 3, because that's the one I have marked, 3 or 4.
So is it fair to say that even if we have the reprogramming that takes place, that we're hopeful will take place to reduce the impact on the workforce, that the work scope impacts would still be in play? In other words, we'd still have the work scope impacts, would the work scope impacts go away if the workforce impacts go away?
Yes.
Really?
All right, so in other words, if we can get the reprogramming request approved, then we would not see a reduction in H. Canyon's ability to process used nuclear fuel in April and May.
It doesn't mean that we will be processing at an accelerated rate, but we would continue processing at the rate we're currently processing, and therefore maintain the personnel that are processing as we speak.
Now, I see at the bottom it says no shipments to WIP. Now, what does that mean? If there's no shipments out to WIP, does that mean?
Would mean from the Savannah River site. Basically, the personnel that are supporting the shipments of transuranic waste to the waste isolation pilot plant will be moved around and doing other higher priority work, and so those shipments would not be occurring, even though the waste has been characterized and certified.
Now, if the WIP shipments stop and H. Canyon activities are reduced, does that mean that waste that we don't want to be in Aiken County for an indefinite period of time will just be sitting at the site without any plan to do anything with it? I guess from a layman's, I mean, I'm a layman. I don't have the
background. We certainly have a plan to do something with it. We don't have the dollars to execute it in all cases. We will continue some of our waste management activities. We have to. But processing of used fuel in H. Canyon without the funds to maintain a full complement of workforce would be very difficult. And so we may initially, what we would do would revert back to the quarterly processing of fuel so that we maintain our expertise. And at some point, if the funds are not restored, then we